I'm working on a book on my movie reviews.
Really? That'd be cool.
It's taken me forever because I have to use the internet Wayback Machine and try and find websites that don't exist anymore and recover all this stuff. I found out just today that next month will be 19 years of writing about movies online.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I've averaged more than 200 movie reviews a year for 19 years. Yeah.
And something like that would really sell, I think, because a lot of people out there just interested in nostalgia, old movies, and that sort of thing. Like you say, just people just sit around and talk. Every time you get a conversation at a party or something, it's talking about some movie you saw back in 2004.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's weird. You ever go back and read some of the stuff you wrote when you were younger? And
occasionally I come across it, and I'm amazed at what a good writer I was. I can't believe that I wrote that stuff because it's really, then I had more time to think about it. That's before I got wrapped up in the grinder over here of, you know, cranking stuff out every day and that sort of thing. And people have asked about a book, and maybe someday, you know, I don't get into that and I'm still trying to create new stuff.
Yeah.
But it would be nice. Yeah, I've seen some of the old things that I've done. And the irony of it was that they were talking about an article I wrote about some guy from the Ponset out there the other day. I don't remember the name. I don't remember the column. So they Googled it, and sure enough, back in 2012, I wrote a column about this guy. Completely. Of course, here again, we get older. Our memory isn't as good. But, and of course, when you do them twice a week, you just sort of lose track of what you... Some of them I remember that stood out, you know, but yeah, the day-to-day thing. But that was important to them. I mean, it was a guy they knew and all that kind of stuff. It was important in their life. I remember the same thing about the Henry County Fair. We'd go over there every year and, you know, do our broadcast. And years later, people would come up and said, you know, hi, Dave. And I had no idea who this person was.
Right.
And it was somebody we met for 5 seconds at the fair that we interviewed, you know, at the merchant stand or something. And but, yeah, it's nice. You know, you want to be polite and never put them off.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. If you're ready, I'm ready.
All right. Let me see. We're looking at half an hour. I want to clock that. I want to at least have an idea. Okay, I'm ready.
3, 2, 1. And it is time now for our monthly edition of Kiwani Back When. And joining us live in the studio is Dave Clark. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Sean. I guess it's morning. It's morning somewhere. Just like it's 5 o'clock, I guess.
We're going to be talking about a very unique topic today because Kiwani has a very unique history when it comes to the drive-thru.
That's right. We're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, and I know it's at the top of your list too, and that's food.
Yes.
And the thing that what struck me was one night I was sitting down here, as many of us do now with the pandemic, at the drive-thru at Dairy Queen, and I was thinking about all the drive-thrus in Kiwani. And not only that, but grocery stores or restaurants and so forth. And it's been a struggle. We started out just with drive-thrus and carry out, and then some are having dining rooms open up and that sort of thing. Nobody's doing the business that they want to, but we're able to stay alive. But I felt that Kiwani is uniquely positioned to deal with the pandemic. We didn't realize this. But and even if you cook at home, I see the retail sales figures came out the other day, and for second quarter, that's all pandemic months, and food is up 23% in sales, which means everybody is cooking at home, eating at home, or even the restaurants and drinking establishments were down 8.5%, but that might be because the dining rooms are closed, you know, like Cerno's doesn't, I mean, now they're eating in, but for a long time they didn't. And some are, I went through a Pizza Hut the other night, and they said in October they're going to open up their dining room again. So, I mean, it's slowly, but anyway, this is such... A lot of towns this size don't have that many outlets where you can eat, which shows we really are the hog capital of the world. We still hold the title, but in a different respect. So I started thinking back about all the places, you know, how this sort of evolved and how much one time, you know, drive-thrus, walk-ups, all that kind of stuff. Now we have drive-in banks, we have drive-in pharmacies, we had a drive-in theater south of town, and it's just everything. We were talking before we went on the program here about the People's National Bank.
Right.
And that was the first drive-thru banking facility back in, it was 58 when the Earl Hotel burned. We talked about that in another program. And they built a window along the north wall of their facility facing out towards the parking lot. There was a big building there that survived the fire that was the Adams Appliance. It was Walters and Olson's Grocery. And the second and third floor were the Legion for many buildings. So that was there. So it created an alley you could drive down, come out on Chestnut Street. But then the unique thing that blew everybody's mind was that they put an island It went north and south, and it was just outside Cerno's. Then it was Lloyd's or Ann's back door. And they had two tellers out there, and they had a communication link. They could send stuff back and forth, obviously, to the bank. But they locked them up in there, and I, when I took news briefs around for the radio station, that was one of my regular stops. Was we had Shirley and Janie who were in there, and they both got a news brief, you know. but that was, you know, here again, it all was brought about by the advent of automobiles. People traveled more. The nice thing about drive-ins too is, or drive-throughs, is you don't have to dress up.
Right.
You don't have to get out. You don't have to find a parking place. Get out. Walk in. Get waited on. You know, you can just drive through or call ahead and pick up. And this is what has kept us going. You know, I'm a bachelor who doesn't cook much, and this has been a lifeline for me. I don't know about you. You're probably a master chef. You know?
Oh yeah, right.
but anyway, I went back to look at some of the early ones. The one that all the old timers remember and talk about is the Made Right. And it had the Made Right sandwich. It was part of the original chain that had the ground hamburger, you know, loose hamburger right. sandwiches. And it stood west of the Parkside Hotel at the corner of Lexington and 3rd Street, and which is now Parkside Apartments. And it was started in 1927 by partners Davis and Kelly. And for the first time, they had an indoor restaurant, and it stayed that way up until the 70s. They had indoor seating, about six booths at the south end. They had the kitchen, then at the north end, they had a horseshoe-shaped counter that guys would come in and have coffee and BS and all this other kind of stuff. But then they had this window. I think there was one, I don't remember two, but that was the most popular hangout for kids. That was the first hangout in Kewaunee up through the 50s, when you'd come down in your car and you'd sit out in the parking lot and you'd walk up to the window and you'd order a couple of Made Rights or whatever. And guys worked there. A lot of high school kids got jobs working there and so forth. Joe Bershaw, who had worked for Davis and Kelly, managed it for him, later took over ownership, and he headed up into the 70s when he retired. And but anyway, that was kind of the first thing where you had to get out of your car, but you didn't have to go in and sit down. It was a variation of getting away from the sit-down restaurant, so to speak. But the next thing were the A&W root beer stands. We had one at the corner of Main and 6th, where the Red Apple is now, and one out at Tenney and South, where the bank is now. And it provided kids a place to drive on weeknights or weekends or all summer, called the Loop. You were cruising the Loop from north to south, from A&W to north to south. And those were the places where you drove in, and the car hop comes out and takes your order and brings it out and hangs it on your window, and you know, all the A&W root beer things. We also had two Dairy Queen ice cream stands. They were walk-ups, they were small stores, nothing like what we have today. But one of those was right south of the corner of 6th and Main, where Factory Tire Outlet is now, going down there. The other one was out, it's now a vacant lot out there south of Subway, on the corner across from Los Ranchitos. And but anyway, the same thing, you'd walk up and get an ice cream cone, and I don't think Dairy Queen at that time had a lot of, they had sundaes and banana splits and stuff like that that you could buy. So that was the Loop. And in between, we had Sandy's, which was of course across from the school, and Country School, which was down here at the corner of Oak and Main, and I'll tell you about them. But do you have any memories from your early days of a drive-through or a... Now, I'm a little past the car hop era. You know, I graduated in 67. Sandy's had just been built, you know, which we thought was kind of cool, right across from the school. But do you remember anything from your early days?
Back in LeClaire, Iowa, we have, with it still there somehow, this very tiny building. All they ever did was milkshakes and hamburgers. That was it.
Oh, wow.
That was all they ever had. Yeah. It may still all be the only thing they had there. And it was this little tiny building. You just walked up to it and said, burger and a shake, please.
What else?
They gave you a burger and a shake.
What else would you want? Well, see, that was the concept that the guys, Rick Lundberg and so forth, started with Sandy's, and of course Ray Kroc with McDonald's almost simultaneously, was this idea of fast food. All Sandy's and McDonald's ever sold was a hamburger, fries, and a drink. Hamburgers were 15 cents. I forget what price, but you could, for 35 cents, you could get a whole meal. And then maybe they had fish on Friday, or maybe they had an ice cream cone or something like that that they would serve. But that was what fast food was. That's why we no longer technically have fast food. We have restaurants that have a menu that you order off of. You still walk in or you drive through, but it's a lot more complicated and takes more time. So anyway, but that's what we want. You know, everybody wants all the different sandwiches and all the different drinks and stuff like that that they serve. But the A&W, I couldn't find an exact year. They were opened in the 50s. A couple named Mickey and Laura Tiemann ran them for a few years. And then they were replaced later on, but that was kind of the cruise in the loop. We also had a Dog and Suds, which was out where Community State Bank is now, just north of where Sandy's popped up. They were there in the 50s and came along. And then came Sandy's. They built the restaurant here in Kewaunee it opened on August 19th, 1965. And they had been in business, it was a half a dozen guys from Kewaunee that started this thing, and then they sold franchises to all their friends and relatives that would buy them that didn't think they were nuts. A lot of people thought they were crazy because this fast food thing is never going to fly.
Right.
Yeah, right. So anyway, people in Kewaunee just harped and harped and harped on them. Why are you building restaurants all over the United States and you're not building one here in your hometown of Kewaunee? Well, the reason was, of course, obviously, that they went to Peoria and Champaign and bigger cities, you know, that had more volume. They had to have volume to make money with hamburgers and drinks at 15 cents. So anyway, finally, they came up with the idea of a training center. The store number 100, this is 100th store that they built, was a place that they brought in people to train for management positions in the other stores that they were expanding into. And they learned about how to cook hamburgers and how the machines worked, and it was a training facility. So that's how they could write it off. That restaurant stayed there. Matter of fact, part of the building is still La Gondola, part of the same building.
Yeah.
In 1974, Hardee's out in Rocky Mount, South Carolina, bought out Sandy's. And for several years, they had their regional headquarters in Sandy's national headquarters south of town. But eventually, they built two Hardee's here. They didn't build one on Store 100, because that was a company property. They built a Hardee's South, right about where the South McDonald's is now. It was just north of where Beck's is. Then they built another one up where the NW North was on the corner of 6th and Main. So we still had a loop we could cruise back and forth. Amazing what cars will do. So anyway, that kind of replaced that. And Dog and Suds just got torn out and they were gone. But in the meantime, in 65, then in 66, we have down here on the corner of Oak and Main, a guy from Springfield, Capital Dairy Queen, that wants to build the world's largest Dairy Queen. And it was. It may still be. You look at Dairy Queens all over the place, and now they're more indoor. They have food and ice cream both. But you won't find one as big as the one down here. And I had a playground inside and all that stuff. And I'm sorry, that was the Dairy Queen. I'm skipping my... I already got confused here. I'm sorry, that's not Dairy Queen. That's Country School. Came in 66. This was the guy from Springfield. He was from Springfield, and it was a country school, it was called. It was built like an old schoolhouse, and it had a little bell up on top, all modern and so forth. But it had the very first drive-through along the north side of the building. And it was still it was a drive-up, not a walk-up. And did it all in one window. A lot of these early on drive-throughs were just the one window. You come in, you order, you pay. And, of course, it was fast enough you could do it that way. And they stayed that way until, I don't know, later on it became O'Reilly's and, you know, that whole corner went by the wayside. But we had Country School here in 66, which might have been spawned by the Sandy's thing. It wasn't fast food, but people saw that Kewaunee was a market where they could, you know, make money with new kinds of food and that sort of thing. So we have Sandy's, and then we have Country School that went down the line. In the meantime, going back to the era from the Maid Rite, we had a restaurant called the White Hut, which was downtown. It was on the corner of, opposite the Boss Building, First and Chestnut, I guess that is. It's now a vacant lot where Johnson's parks their trucks and stuff. But they had a walk-up where you could park and walk up, and they had weird hours, you know, sometimes they were open 24 hours and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that they had that. But anyway, we moved along to the McDonald's, we're going to get to the McDonald's in a minute here, but the Sandy's came and went. Then we come down to McDonald's. They started in January of 1977 was the first one. It was where just north of where the current one is in the 300 block of Tenney Street. And the problem was they hadn't had, here again, drive-ups, walk-ups, drive-throughs weren't completely new. We already had Country School and a few others. But for some reason, there was opposition to this one. Roger Musselman, who became the owner, you know, later on and owned it until this couple has it now, had a zoning problem. They had to rezone the property because that whole block was getting rezoned, or at least the south half of it was. But the problem was, in November of 1976, they had a big row at the Planning Commission meeting because the residents of the area were complaining about the drive-through, not the fact they were going to build a fast food restaurant, which we considered beneath us, you know, in some cases, but that they were going to put this drive-through. And the reason they objected was because it wrapped around like the one does now. It wrapped around the back, you know, came in the north, wrapped around the back and drive up on the south side. Well, the residents across the street, across on Tenney Street, were the loudest objectors because the headlights would shine in their windows.
Oh, yeah.
They said.
Right.
That's their thing. So McDonald's finally came back and said, we agree that we'll screen the drive-through, you know, which I don't think they ever did. But anyway, they got past that. And I mean, it was all kind of, the lights don't shine across the street anyway. And by that time, they had the four lane, so it was even that further away and that sort of thing. So anyway, they started that in 1977. They tore that one down and built the one that's there today, just south of it. They kept going in one while they built the other one to the south. And made the parking lot where the old one was, and then they built the new one that's there now in May of 2003. And then in 2006, in April of 2006, they came up with a whole new concept of a double drive-through, two drive-throughs, which we have there now.
Yeah.
Goes even faster. Dairy Queen, the new Dairy Queen here on Main Street, was built in July of 1993, and they started out with a double drive-through. And I don't think they really used that much initially. McDonald's was drive-through business right from the start. And Burger King the same way. You know, their people just go through there constantly.
Yeah, it's fascinating, though, is that what we learn about when we're hearing about stuff like this is the unintended consequences of innovation. When you're talking about McDonald's and the double drive-through, and you know, the things that have to go into making that work, you have to think about zoning, you have to think about mm-hmm. parking, you have to think about traffic, the way that traffic is going to flow mm-hmm. going into McDonald's and coming out of McDonald's. Mm-hmm. All of these are all city planning things that mm-hmm. The city of Kewaunee is dealing with, even as we're just thinking, I just want a burger.
Mm-hmm. This recently came up, I guess we can say this now, it's not a big secret, but John Cernovich bought the old Spetz Brothers paint building up there on the corner of 3rd and Main, and he and his associates are remodeling that. It's not going to be a restaurant per se, it's going to be, I don't know what, he's got something planned in there involving food or whatever. It's not Cerno's, it's going to be a different skew, and I'll leave that story for another time. But they wanted a drive-through. And they wanted to come off west side of the building on that parking lot and come around the building and come out on Main Street. And the city, wait a minute, there's a turn lane along, if you envision 3rd and Main on the corner there, there's a turn lane that goes up, plus you're pulling out onto Main Street traffic, which is the problem, quite frankly, that McDonald's has had all the way along, is pulling out onto that four-lane traffic
right
on the curb. And so the city said, well, wait a minute, here's why this won't work, and you can turn it the other way. You know, your window will be on the north side, but they come in and get their order, and then, or I guess wherever they put the window, you drive out then on 3rd Street, which is a lot easier to get off. Then you can go on to Main Street or go back to Tremont or whatever. And so, yeah, it's still a consideration because here again, this magic thing they built in 1970, called the four lane, this is the new downtown Kewaunee right in front of us. We're looking at it out the window now here at Regional Radio. And everybody complains about there not being a downtown anymore. Well, they're still, look at the retail sales tax. It keeps going up and up and up. So people are spending money here. Lumber was up 34 or 35% this time. Well, that's Menards, obviously. People are doing more building and more handiwork and stuff when they're, you know, home, you know, can't go to work or whatever.
Right.
Another good benefit of the pandemic, I guess, if you can say that. But the same way with the food, you know, they were catering to people who drive, people who don't want to get dressed up, people who don't want to wait forever and inside and that sort of thing.
What's interesting, too, when you look at the history of the drive-through here in Kewaunee and you talk about all of these various different restaurants that you've mentioned, You're building an entire map of the history of this city and the way that it's changed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the first ones were downtown, the White Hut and the Made Right, of course, were downtown. And they had more downtown restaurants. Look at the old newspapers. There was cafes. There was restaurants. There was fine dining places. And you look at the variety we have here in Kewaunee now. I've often said, you know, for a town this size, I counted one time several years ago, there were 28 places that you could eat in Kewaunee. And I doubt that any town, that usually a town of 13,000 will have a couple of fast foods, it'll have a couple of family restaurants and maybe one fine dining country club type place. But they, you go to Canton or Monmouth, of course Monmouth is a college town, so that's kind of an exception. But towns generally don't have this many eating places. We just love to eat, and we eat out. I'm surprised that places like Sullivan's and Save-A-Lot and Aldi's and Walmart can stay in business, but they obviously do. Look, of course, with the pandemic, people have been buying groceries.
Oh yeah.
But how do they stay in business when everybody eats out? You know, you get home from work and the kids are home from school, unless they're home from school already, and let's go get something to eat, and mom doesn't have to do the dishes and the whole nine yards. That was the whole idea behind the drive-in theater, was you can just come as you are, you know, unless you want to go in the concession stand and get a pop and a
right.
and so forth. You didn't have to dress up or get any kind of decent clothes on. Heck, you'd go in your pajamas, you know, who care. But that's one thing that I think makes Kiwanis unique and position us in a good place for dealing with. And not everybody likes, you know, here again, if you want to do a lot more, probably a lot more people are doing more cooking inside because of the pandemic, you know, that's how it's done. The reason Kiwanis, I think, is this way is with a lot of things, with the retail sales tax. We are, if you look at a map, we are equidistant within 30 or 50 miles from the Quad Cities, Peoria, LaSalle, Peru, Galesburg. We're just far enough away so that people can go there once in a while, but they don't go there all the time. And that's always kind of been Kiwanis' salvation. That's what's kept business going here.
Yeah.
And I think now with the pandemic, I think more people are probably staying hunkered down here in town. So they're buying more fast food or drive-thrus. The indoor dining, I noticed that Broken Chimney, Happy Joe's, of course, Cerno's has got an outdoor patio, Station House has got an outdoor patio. They've all adapted to dealing with this in the best way they can and doing a very good job. People are obviously going out and responding to that.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and this is a great topic because, it covers so much unique history of this town, and you can build such a unique map of Kiwanis based on the restaurants that were here and the ones that are. And that's what makes this such a great topic.
And you know, the one thing that they keep yearning for, all the coffee shop society, that we don't have. Now, see, we have Mexican, a couple of them. We have Chinese, a couple of them. We have fast food. We have dine-in. We have ice cream and all this other kind of stuff. The one thing that people yearn for eternally is a buffet, country buffet or whatever.
Yeah.
They want an 80-item all-you-can-eat buffet, and it better be hot, and it better not cost more than $8.95. But there was one up in Princeton for a while, and it may be out of business now.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Trino Gomez, the manager out there at Pizza Hut one time, and I was sitting in a booth, and a couple behind me were talking to the waitress how they'd come from Peoria, and she said, "No, what brought you to Kiwanis?" And they said, "Well, we came up here to Pizza Hut." "Well, don't you have a Pizza Hut in Peoria?" And they said, "Well, we do, but they don't have a buffet." So, and of course, Pizza Hut has the buffet with
right.
the pizza and the salad bar and all that kind of stuff. So I asked Trino, I said, "Why wouldn't the Pizza Hut in Peoria have a buffet?" He says, "This is one of the last ones around," he said, "because they're so expensive. Here again, you have to have volume."
Yeah.
And the one thing I'm just amazes me about this Pizza Hut in Kiwanis, here again, when that was built, it was the supposedly, outside of Orlando, Florida, the largest Pizza Hut in the United States. And we have the largest Dairy Queen in Illinois. You know, why do people wonder why we're not the hog capital of the world? You know, we eat and eat, and we come to the trough eternally. And so that was, he said, yeah, that's why we, and he says, we've cut it back, sealed it down, and we keep it going because people here still, it makes it profitable. We're not making a lot on it. And when they reopened, the waitress that talked to me last night in the drive-thru said that they're not going to bring back the buffet and the and the salad bar. They're just going to have the restaurant, basically because of cost. And buffets and things are, you know, they're sloppy. It's places for things to spread and all that kind of.
Sure.
It's harder to keep that contained and so forth.
Wow.
So, but anyway, yeah. And we had Kenny Davidson's restaurant up here. It was a smorgasbord where actually it's where that Mexican restaurant, actually it's the building south of that on 2nd Street there. And we had W.K. Kenny Davidson, who was a big restaurateur. He was president of the Illinois Restaurant Association or something. Then he became, got a politician, went to Springfield, became a state representative, and did a lot for the area. But you go down after church to Davidson's, to the smorgasbord here again. It was a long buffet, and they would slice the, supposedly, I'm told, this is before my time, they would slice the roast beef so thin that you could see it, read a newspaper through it. And he would, and Kenny would always stand there and watch people when they came through, and if they were ordering too much, he would, you know, have them back off. He kind of watched every plate to make, but that was one of the more popular. And of course, we had Bracken's out at the south end of town, where Bracken Shopping Center is now. It was a popular. That's the one thing we really don't have now, unless it's the Dunes, which, you know, serves meals once in a while. We don't have a fine dining. We don't have a country club, a lakeside resort, that sort of thing, where if you got fancy people in town. We have places to have wedding receptions and all that kind of stuff, but we don't have a place to go, because we really, the composition of Kewaunee's population has changed. Where we had the factories here, you had a upper middle class group, and even an upper class group, people, the owners of the factories and things.
Such a great point, too, is that the number of restaurants and the style of restaurants also reflects who lives here.
Exactly.
and their values.
Yeah. There's a reason why, and of course people yearn for the Wanee Farm to come back, but in the final years when Carol and Glenn were out there, you know, they saw it changing. Liquor laws changed and traffic changed and more competition, and, you know, the whole thing. And you don't have people that go out. The Wanee Farm relied on old farmers, about four or five of them with their wives, that came in every Tuesday night or every Saturday night, you know, repeat business, and they brought a group in, and they would, you know, take up a table, and you'd have half a dozen of those people. And society sort of moved away from that. Here again, fast food did that, you know, and we don't have, here again, the people that can pay those kind of prices. We have the Broken Chimney now, which is considered probably the upper scale here, and Cerno's has a nice atmosphere and that sort of thing. So if you want to take somebody out for a nice meal, people have people in town, business guests and that sort of thing, or if your aunt's here from Colorado and you want to, you know, wine and diner. But that might be one criticism, as we are. I know the Chamber of Commerce down here once said a few years ago, people were saying, why can't we have Wendy's or Arby's or Long John Silver's? And Mark McKenna said at the time, he said that these people all come periodically, believe it or not, because they're always looking for markets. Or a franchisee would be looking for a place to build one of his six new restaurants or whatever. And they see the population sign at the end of town and look at the number, and then they drive down the four lane and they see all of the signs.
Yeah.
All of the people. The food dollar in Kewaunee is extremely tight, is extremely divided up here. And that's why the ones that are going, are to be commended for, you know, for staying in business. Very competitive, and people come and go, but most of them have stayed. I mean, there's not very often that a restaurant closes around here. But it brings back another point, and that is too, is we're seeing all these things now in the media about supporting small business.
Right.
And all these people, even the chains, you know, Subway or Happy Joe's or whatever, are all small businesses. They all employ people. And what I worry about, if this goes on another 6 months or another year or whatever they're talking about, God, who knows. But, you know, they're running on a shoestring right now. And if we don't support them, if we don't go out once in a while, like I've got a habit now, I'll go on the Broken Chimney, has tried several things, and one of them is a drive-thru, which I thought they'd never do, and I don't get a lot of business, but I fell in love with their ribs. So I go out there once a week, you know, not always the same night, but I call ahead and I order a half rack of ribs and a side of baked beans and a drink, and I go through and pick it up.
Yeah.
And it's a little pricey for what my, you know, weekly food budget is, but it's one more thing, you know, or go to a Dairy Queen or go to any of these, you know, drive-thrus, you know, whether it's McDonald's or Subway or, gosh, I've got the list here. We got 10 of them. Subway, Happy Joe's, La Gondola, Dairy Queen, Broken Chimney, Los Ranchitos, Burger King, Taco Bell, Subway, Pizza Hut, McDonald's, plus four grocery stores, a bunch of banks, ATMs. We even have a drive-through at the public library and at the post office. You know, you don't ever have to get out of your car in this town. You can come to Kewaunee, you can drive in, do everything you want to do, get fed, and drive out again.
Kewaunee, the drive-through capital.
Yes, that could well be it. But that, like I said, the main point there, and a lot of that is convenience. The whole convenience market just exploded, you know, in the 80s and 90s. And that's what this is all about, is getting it faster, and you know, the price is what it is, I guess. I'm not sure if it's any cheaper. But I noticed one thing too, that they expanded to two windows. I think in 89, I saw an ad where McDonald's went from one window to two windows, which we have now commonplace. Well, Dairy Queen, well, they have the two drive-thrus, but basically you would drive up and get everything from one window. Well, then they decided that was getting slowed down. So the first window now is for the cashier and the second window. So that's become another thing to add in there. Plus, I guess Burger King has added a second drive-thru, don't they? They have two lanes to go through. I mean, we have three fast food restaurants in this town, semi-fast foods, that have double drive-thru windows in a town of less than, you know, 15,000 people or whatever the census shows and so forth.
It's remarkably, this is why this is a topic, because it's remarkably reflective of the community and who it is and our history. And Dave, just thank you so much for this great topic.
It started Kewaunee back when. See you later.